This is going to be the second last talk. Yeah. So who's going to leave here at one? I heard a few people are leaving earlier today. Never mind. It's you've got a few more hours left until the end of the retreat, so there are still moments for you to just do a little bit more practice. And I was just thinking about what to talk about this morning. And I think it's always nice to just continue on the theme of just getting along with the meditation practice. And I remember when Ajahn Brahm came off his 6 months retreat he spent at Bodhinyana. And I think at the time he was kind of busy, and he wanted to take off 6 months. 6 months of complete solitude, not talking to anybody and not seeing anybody. And at the time, I think Ajahn Yanadhamma was staying in the monastery, and he took care of the place when Ajahn Brahm was on retreat. So every day a monk would bring Ajahn Brahm food and would pick up his bowl, clean it, and then fill it up the next day, and then bring him his food for the day. So that's how he lived, in just in a small kuti in the forest. And I think he said that he never ventured out more than I think 20 or 30 meters within where he was staying. So yeah, 6 months by himself, I think with a few Buddhist books. And also I think towards the end of the retreat he started to write his first book, Opening the Door of Your Heart. So basically he came off the retreat and he said, if you go on one of those retreats, that either two things can happen. You can either go crazy or you can bliss out. So I think Ajahn Brahm blissed out for those 6 months. And then he came out and he gave a couple of teachings. And I think one of the themes that he talked about was contentment. So he said contentment was the driving force in his success when he was meditating for those 6 months. So, and then he used the simile of the thousand petal lotus, and he basically talked about how a meditator puts his attention or mindfulness on the object of meditation. And he compared that to the sun putting its energy into a lotus flower. And the longer the sun shines on the lotus, the more it opens up, one petal at a time. But as soon as a cloud passes and blocks the sun, the lotus will start to close up. And he compared that to the mind. He said that mindfulness, watching whatever object, is like the sun shining on the lotus. And when you have like a hindrance that comes along, say, you know, restlessness, craving, anger, that's like a cloud blocking the mindfulness from watching the object. And then what happens is the mind doesn't make any progress anymore. So as soon as the cloud passes, the mindfulness is back on the object, the mind starts to get deeper. So he said, the process of meditation is basically just shining that mindfulness onto the object of your meditation, whether it's contentment, whether it's the breath, or whether it's loving kindness. And the process of meditation just opens up naturally, just like the lotus opens up naturally when the sun is shining on it. And that's all it is. That's all it is. Just this one, like one intention when one's doing the practice. And the mind will start to open up and reveal to you all the jewels and the truths of the Dhamma. So in a sense it is a simple practice, but we just have to train our minds. And it is true, the reason why it's difficult is because of the conditioning that we've been exposed to when we were younger, the conditioning that we are exposed to in today's age with the internet, a fast-paced life. We get taught to analyze and compare and find fault. And in a sense, we take that into our meditation practice. And a part of the path is to, in a sense, recondition ourselves. And you can compare it to like conditioning is sort of like when you're walking through the Amazon and there's trees surrounding you. You could hear the sounds of the animals. You could feel the temperature on your skin. And you don't know it, but you're walking through mist. You could sort of sense it. You can sort of see it, but you don't know what kind of effect it has on you. But when you continue to walk around the Amazon, exploring it, after a while, the mist will start to saturate your clothes, and then you become wet. And sort of like in the same way, if you surround yourself with the Dhamma and with the practice, you're putting yourself in a situation where your mind gets conditioned by these teachings. And then over time, your way of thinking starts to change. You start to think in line with the Dhamma. So, this conditioning and changing of the mind, it sort of happens naturally and slowly and without you knowing. So when Ajahn Brahm, he always jokes around and says that when you monks go to the monastery, it's sort of like you go there to get brainwashed. And that's the same, sort of the same thing that's happening here. But in a good way. with the meditation practice, you can try to describe it in different ways. And when you practice, sometimes it's about the attitude that we add on to how we look at our own minds. And sometimes I want to spend time with my mother. And when we're practical people, we like to do things. And she always tells me, right, when you do something, you do it, you put your whole heart into it. You put kindness, you put love into it. And then when you do it in this way, you always come out with a good result. So in a sense, she's talking about having passionate, kind attitude towards whatever you're doing. And I think in the same way, if you apply that to everything you do in life, then the results that you get from it would be a positive and good result. And in the same way, when we talk about the meditation practice, even though as simple as it is, monks tried to give people different types of angles to look at the practice to help them along the way. And one of those advices that I can give you is when you're meditating, just try to add that little bit of love, that little bit of kindness into the attitude when you're meditating. And yeah, and you know, when you add that metta or that compassion, that kindness towards your meditation object, the object becomes easier to watch. One doesn't get so bored with it. And I was just thinking of something, but I sort of like, but then well, anyways, it doesn't matter. Okay. So, yeah. So I'm just sitting here quietly and yeah, just a few words of encouragement, yeah, for each and every one of us. I think for some of us it could be a little bit confusing and challenging when it comes to understanding our minds, and yeah. It's a whole new experience for us, and I think when we come here we have the intention to get something from the meditation practice. There's a yearning within us to find a little bit of peace and a little bit of stillness, and we're here for the weekend and we are trying to put effort into it. Yeah, we're sitting down and trying to watch our breath going in and out, and we're listening to the instructions, but then sometimes we just find it difficult. There's a sense of struggle there, but just like a few words of encouragement is that struggle, you know, is like normal. It is to be expected, and like I said earlier, you can't. This mind is sort of like goes off in its own course. So the only thing we can do basically is to be patient and to just sit down and just watch whatever's happening. And this path to like peace and stillness, it's different for everybody. Everybody comes from a different walk of life, and when you come to a meditation retreat, you have different teachers, and different teachers may resonate with you differently, and. Because of our minds are so different and people are so different, the path that we take leads to the one goal, and that goal is like nirvana and freedom, and the Buddha compared that to like the many rivers that you have that meet, many streams that meet into a river and then goes into the ocean. And that's sort of like the different individuals that come along on this path to do the practice. And we find we come from different angles, we like different practices, but then at the end, we reach a place of freedom and stillness, and that's all the same for everybody. And you know, that's what it's been said. It's like when you have these like deeper meditations that Buddha experienced. Everybody who gets that deep meditation will experience the same thing. Even though the Buddha is different to us, his way of speaking, the way he thought, how he conducted himself on a day-to-day basis is all different. And also the other monks who have, and nuns as well, who have developed the deeper meditations. The deeper meditations are all the same for everybody. So it's sort of like... So it's interesting, you know, there's all sorts of like different approaches that one can take to try to develop their meditation practice. And it's good, I think it's good for everybody to just try the different ways. Take for example, when Ajahn Brahm grew up in Thailand, it was a tough environment, and one of the teachings that Ajahn Chah would try to the point that he was trying to get across is that you learn from your suffering. Suffering is a great teacher. So what he did was he, after the meal time, in the heat of Thailand, there would be a shed, a tin shed, with just like color bond over the top, no insulation, and he would get all the monks to go sit in the shed, close the door with all their robes on. So you have like the, you have this outer robe, and then you have another one that goes on top of it, which is double layered. So you're wearing three layers of like blankets, and you're sitting in this tin shed. And I think the whole purpose of it was to like make the monks realize that life is suffering, and with the amount of intense pain that a human being can go through, if you can like endure it or meditate or find that space in your mind, then you can deal with it without suffering too much. He could be making the point that you may be getting like the physical suffering, but you can also, but and that cannot be avoided. But the mental suffering, you can work with that. And that was his approach. And you hear these, you know, the tradition that the Thai forest monks practice is more of the tradition that looks more deeply into like the pain and suffering that you may feel in the body. And one of the other practices is to just sit down for many, many hours to see how much pain you can endure. So you would like sit like 3 or 4 hours without moving, and then just to watch the pain to see what it is. And that's the way they've been practicing for many, many years. And but just growing up in Bodhinyana Monastery, Ajahn Brahm was exposed to that, and he knew that it wasn't good for his practice. So when he decided to set up and run his monastery, he spoke more on about developing more of a positive and more gentle and kind approach to one's meditation. And he always said, you know, there's enough suffering in our own minds to work with. There's no need to add any more suffering onto it. And then this place here, you have different teachers that come and they teach from different angles and different experiences. Yeah. And it's all about, I don't know what you guys really want to get from it. It's like a lot of people say they just want to have a little bit of peace of mind because life is just so busy. And I think one interesting thing a monk told me many, many years ago, he said that whenever he had any troubles or any stress, what he would do is he would just go and meditate, right? He would just meditate and the troubles and stress, they would just like sort itself out. And I always thought that was a nice thing, and there's a lot of, I think there's like some truth behind it as well. Because like people in the world, we're looking for different ways to overcome the stress and anxieties that we may have in life. We go see the psychologist and get some medication, or we talk to life coaches. Life coaches is a big thing these days, and they give us advice. And yeah, some of the advice does work. But the one thing I think which is different and unique to what we do as monks is sometimes when we go through a difficult time or something like that, we just meditate. And meditate sort of like fixes the problem. But we don't really know how that happens, but it happens. So meditation is sort of like making a pizza. Actually, my brother makes pretty good pizza. Have you heard of Dank Pizza? No, he's not that famous yet. But anyways, it's like you make the dough and you put the ingredients on, and you like add bits and pieces onto it to like make it taste better, or taking it to the next level. And I think the meditation is sort of like similar as well. We may just meditate every day and we're just doing the same thing. And sometimes it may get a bit bland or maybe a little bit boring. And all you got to do is just add just a little bit of a metta or loving kindness into the meditation practice. And this makes it just a little bit better. And these are the little tips and tricks that, you know, one can use to help improve their meditation. And also, I think recently when I was listening to one of Ajahn Brahm's talks, and he talked about using imagination to help the meditation process move along. And I've heard this teaching many times, but I never took it to heart. And then one day I tried it, and it's sort of like, yeah, it does work. And so sometimes he talks about, you know, people struggling to watch the breath, and he was actually interviewing somebody, and he told them, and the person said, oh, I'm trying to watch the breath, but I can't watch it. I can only watch it for like 2 or 3 minutes, and then it runs away, and or not even 2 or 3 minutes, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 breaths, and it's not there anymore. And then Ajahn Brahm would say, you know, just imagine that you're watching the breath. So they were doing this like practical class, and this guy was like imagining that he was watching the breath. He's watching the breath. And he could watch it. And Ajahn Brahm said, what are you doing now? And the guy said, I'm watching my breath. And then Ajahn Brahm would go on and say, sometimes imagine that you're meditating like the Buddha. And then how would your mind feel? And just use And sort of like just use that power of the mind which can imagine things to help the meditation move on. And I think it's, and I think it does in a sense work, because we can send our like imagination to maybe a place that we've been to in the past that we felt like a peaceful connection to. This morning I was going for a walk and just having those moments of quietness and just looking into the forest. It's a beautiful forest, and there's something peaceful and still and calming about the forest. And it's basically like a peaceful, calm feeling. And you get that from just walking around. And when you're sitting in meditation, you can bring up that image and just imagine that you're going on that walk again. And you just see how that makes you feel. And you take that along with your meditation practice. Because this is what's been said around, when we're meditating, there's like two parts of the meditation. There's the intellectual part, and also the part where you feel the emotional side of the meditation practice. So that ability to just like imagine and just feel the peacefulness and just a sense of ease when you're meditating helps the meditation go along. And the cerebral side is to use that mindfulness to stay on the object. Is to just recondition your mind to be able to watch the breath. Yeah, because sometimes I think, like, if we're new to meditation, or even we've been meditating for a long time, and we find it difficult to keep our attention on the breath, even though we know what to do, is because we haven't reminded ourselves enough times. We haven't given ourselves those clear instructions. Because always when I'm sitting meditation, and when I don't give myself that clear instruction of watching the breath, then the mind may watch the breath at the beginning, but then it just starts thinking about stuff. But then when I start to just have that clear intention of putting my mind onto the breath, then the mind will stay on it a little bit more. So in a sense, as a meditator, we have to remind ourselves, not constantly, but I think consistently. If you remind yourself too much, you're thinking too much about the meditation and what you're supposed to watch, and that just creates more distraction in the mind. But if you don't remind yourself enough, then the mind will just go, or it won't stay on the object, and it'll just go left, it goes right, it doesn't have any clear instructions, it doesn't know what to do. So in a sense, you've got to find that middle way. That's, the word that this phrase that's been used in Buddhism a lot, is the middle way where you're not too controlling and you're not too loose, and where the mind can just stay put in one place. Okay. So yeah. So now I think it's 9:30. It's 9:30, so I can give you guys a guided meditation. Yeah. We can maybe do a metta meditation or something like that. So you're just sitting down and setting up your mind for the meditation. and make the intention that you're going to meditate for the next half an hour. And what we're doing now is we're knowing and feeling the present moment. And now we're just looking at our minds and not being judgmental about whatever's happening. We're not making the mind into anything, but we're just allowing it to be. Now we can turn our attention to the breathing. Just watching the breath go in and go out. So we're just watching the breath go in and go out, but at the same time, we allow things to be. If the mind is tired, allow that to be. If it's restless, allow that to be. So now we can just change the meditation and turn it into a gratitude or a thankful meditation. So what we can do first is just be thankful. Just be thankful for the opportunity that you've given yourself to have this weekend to look inward. To get some understanding of your own mind. We can also be thankful for the meditation center and the people who have organized the retreat. And also we can be thankful for our fellow meditation retreatants who have given us space and quietness and also companionship on this meditation retreat, supporting each other in our own quiet ways. Also, we can be thankful for the people who donated the food for us to eat yesterday. They don't even know who you are, but they just do it out of the goodness of their own hearts, understanding that they're supporting people who are trying to learn how to meditate in a Buddhist way. And that's enough for them to be able to give a lot of food to complete strangers. And that is to be thankful for. You can also be, I think, grateful towards Bianca and also Scotty, the caretaker, who organize these retreats and do a lot of the hard work behind the scenes. And in a way, just think about things you can be grateful for your life, in your life. The fortunate circumstances that you may be in. The people who care about you. These are things that you can be thankful for. We're going to be thankful for all the people who have helped us in our lives to get to where we are. It's not just one individual, but many, many individuals that have supported us, who have taught us, who have guided us to this point in our lives. And also the many number of people over the years who have contributed their time, money, to be able to build a place, Jhana Grove, so that people can practice comfortably in an ideal setting. There's so many things that we can look into and be grateful for, bringing a bit more positivity into our minds, instead of having a mind which is always fault-finding. We look at people, we see their problems, or how they're annoying us. It just takes us into a dark place. But instead, we look at people and just see the things that they have done for the community around them, or even for yourself. And just be grateful that they have contributed to society in their own ways. The attitude of gratitude brings more positivity to the mind. We can just be grateful for the little things that people have done for us, like driving the monks from one place to another, or helping out with the dishes, or sweeping the floor, or keeping the bathrooms clean. All these things are helpful acts of kindness that sometimes get overlooked. But if you understand, without these little helpers, things wouldn't run as smoothly as they are. And now you can spend the last 5 minutes just to contemplate and see who you can be, who you can have gratitude towards. Now I'll ring the bell so you can come out of your meditation.